Welcome to the Alcohol Free Life podcast, brought to you by thesoberclub.com. I'm Genuinely Grace. This is for you if you've quit the booze or you'd like to, or maybe you're just sober curious. I'll bring you tips and motivation without any judgment, and there'll be inspiration from experts, quitlet authors, and sober heroes. Hi and welcome to the podcast. How are you doing? I hope you've had a good week back to school for those of us with kids and all of that. And my daughter was 16 this week. Oh my goodness, where does that time go? It's been mad busy. Did you see the article in the press this week? I mean, honestly, you have to laugh. The headline was something like, it was words to the effect of shock horror. Wine is good for you even without the alcohol. Well, you don't say. No shit, Sherlock. Seriously? The actual piece was that red wine can still boost your heart health because of the polyphenols, even when it's alcohol free. Well, yes, that's because it's not the alcohol that's good for you. That's because it's the other stuff. As we've said so many times, if you want the resveratrol, or however you say that annoying word, and the polyphenols and the antioxidants, have a grape. Have a grape. It's not about the alcohol being good for you. Oh my goodness. I suppose you should be glad that they're talking about it at least. Flags it up, I suppose. Gets the conversation going and adds yet more weight to my theory that we should keep the ritual, change the ingredients. If you're someone who, for whom it feels really important to sit and have a drink at the end of the day with a friend or a partner or whatever it is, keep that ritual, because otherwise the inner toddler gets all upset and says, well, it's just not fair. It's not the same to have a glass of Coke or orange juice. And yes, I do want something in a nice glass. All good. So even the mainstream press tells you that now. I should goddamn well think so too. To repeat Catherine Gray's fabulous phrase yet again, choosing red wine because it's good for you is like, you know, having a burger for the gherkin. So that was this week's little bit of press. What else can I tell you about? Oh, the Wonderment Festival is coming up, the Wonderment Retreat. Last year, we interviewed Chris Fitchew, who organises these magical events in the Woodland. It's at Wasing Woodland in Reading. It's very difficult to describe what it is, but if you love all things spiritual and yoga, you will absolutely love it. Check it out. There may be a few tickets left. We're talking just glamping or camping and having the most magical experience. I'm going to be there on the Sunday, definitely, possibly the Saturday as well. I'm going to be doing a sober circle on the Sunday. It'd be amazing to see some of you there. So check it out. If you can get to that area, it's wonderment.com. I must also remind you again that I can't remember if we've got spaces, to be honest, but check it out anyway. If you go to thesoberclub.com /events, have a look at our Sober by the Sea events. We will put a new date in. We've been very busy, but we will put a new date in for end of October or November. And there's also a new date for Champneys, if you fancy that self-care and sobriety retreat at Champneys in Tring in Hertfordshire. We have that one coming up on the November the 20th, and another one for January if you want to prep ahead to feel great at New Year. The Sober Club was two last week, of course, which I already told you about. It was amazing. We had a wonderful celebration. We had an angel expert, Bev Densham, come and do a session for us, which was absolutely wonderful. And we had a little bit of a party, albeit on the Zoom. I think we all agreed that the connection is everything, and it really does not matter if you're day one or sober curious, and maybe you've been listening to this podcast for absolutely ages and you've got that little voice saying, come on, it's time. Or maybe you've been sober for years and you like this podcast because we get amazing guests and we talk about all the other stuff, all the what next. So you'll love the Sober Club if that's you, because we do really, you know, look at just all aspects of holistic health and well-being. Anyways, as the Sober Club is too, to celebrate, I thought we'd bring you a few a few of our members. I just think it's lovely to hear different stories and to hear what's been going on in people's lives. And last week heard from Leslie, and this week I thought it'd be lovely to feature someone who's been sober a long time, and also, you know, brings that unique perspective from a parenting point of view. So enjoy the interview. It's Wendy.
Now, Wendy, you were my guest on the podcast, my goodness, ages ago, wasn't it? 2 years ago? Something like that.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I just thought it would be so lovely to catch up because, you know, one of the things that comes up so often for people in the early stages, even when they're like a year sober, is this thing of, oh, well, yeah, but everything will go flat after a while. And, you know, what will it be like when I hit a year and all of this? And I know that when we interviewed you before, you've been a sober club member for ages, which is amazing to have you on board. And I think I interviewed you when you were about 18 months sober. And you did the most lovely inspirational interview for us and shared some amazing inspirational stuff. So now you're coming up to 3.5 years. How amazing is that?
Yeah, 3.5 years nearly. And I haven't had a flat patch yet. Everything just keeps on getting better and better. But I think there's a caveat in that I don't think we can just remove alcohol from our lives and then just wait for everything to roll in. There's an awful lot of proactivity needs to get stirred into that that period in your life, and but then you reap the benefits.
Yeah, absolutely. Let's just back up for anyone who didn't hear that first interview. Just tell us a little bit about your story before. You know, what was your situation and what got you to this decision 3.5 years ago?
So I was a classic grey area drinker. I had given alcohol a position on some sort of pedestal in my life. I viewed it as literally the answer to everything. Mm. How do I relax? How do I celebrate? How do I socialize? How do I cope with the noisy household I've created? You know, and so I, in drinking as frequently as I was, which was most evenings, I was also removing any opportunity I might have to try some of the other things available on planet Earth to relax me, to help me feel joy.
I
reached a point where I just could discern that my life was grey with alcohol in it. And I was looking to bring back some energy, bring back some spark, and I experimented with a series of breaks from alcohol, because that had me feeling that there wasn't a sense of, it wasn't black and white thinking, which had helped me back in the past with habit change. So by allowing myself to say, try this for a little while and then keep going if it feels good, I built up the momentum that I needed. And then before long, I had no desire not to feel the happiness and the joy that I was feeling.
Yeah, absolutely. So it's really important to stress that you're a mum of how many kids you got? Seven. Yeah. Wow. Impressive. And that's a really important part of this for you, isn't it? Because, you know, you've got older kids, and then you've got younger ones as well. So you really have been able to see the difference in your parenting. And I'd really love to talk about that, because, you know, as I say all the time, that is my biggest regret, that I didn't do this sooner. So, you know, my youngest one was 12, 13 when I started this. And so I missed all of those years, really. And that's my only regret. So I'd be really interested to know your thoughts on this, because I know there'll be a lot of people listening who, that will be one of the main reasons they know it's time. Because once the kids start noticing, you know, how many bottles are going into the recycling, once it kind of dawns on you that, hold on a minute, I can't even have a goddamn play date without there having to be alcohol involved. And I mean, it just becomes too much, doesn't it?
It does. And obviously now, with the benefit of hindsight and with the enlightenment and the awareness I now have, I'm so pleased not to be modeling an unhealthy relationship with alcohol. not that I'm entirely convinced you can have a particularly healthy one if you know, if you're demonstrating to your children that it's the only way to celebrate something or commiserate something. But that's another conversation. For me, the pride I have within myself that I am modeling to them, this is how you can relax. This is how you can find joy. You don't need to do this as an ongoing narrative throughout your life.
Yeah.
It's huge for me. Little things like reading a story and remembering the story that I'm reading to them.
Yeah. I mean, the amount of times I used to just rush through that stuff because, like, yeah, for God's sake, I don't want to be sitting reading a bedtime story when there's a glass of wine waiting for me, right? Used to be, I mean, how awful that I missed all of that.
I mean, like your children, my children were never at risk, you know, one, two glasses of wine, but most evenings perhaps. And, you know, I just had this sense of not being fully present for them.
Yeah.
Mentally more than physically. And so, yeah, and parenting is so much easier in my personal experience. I feel so much calmer. I have so much more patience. And I'm able to, because I have such a deep resilience now.
Yeah, isn't that such a great word? Yeah.
I feel as though I can meet life's challenges.
Yeah.
With my shoulders back, my head held high, and just calmly sort of get on with it. And that's huge in parenting.
Yeah, it really is. So what would you say, your kids have noticed any difference?
My younger children have barely seen me drinking. I think if I spoke with them about it, they might say that I spend longer reading their bedtime stories.
Yeah,
we go to the park more. They might say that we play games after dinner more. I think it's in many ways a measure of how grey area of a drinker I was. You know, they won't have memories of finding me somewhere where I shouldn't have been, of me not remembering to pick them up from school, all sorts of things like that. But I think if you spoke with them, they perhaps would say that I'm quite calm and that
which is pretty amazing, quite frankly, having that many kids to be calm. I most certainly was not calm, and that's for sure. And then what about, you know, with teenagers and with older kids? Because again, this is something that affects, you know, so many of us. How do we handle this situation? How have you found it works well? Because, you know, we can't just say, right, that's it, I've stopped drinking, so you may never touch a glass in your life. You are banned from this home. This just doesn't work, does it? So what have you found to be, I mean, as you say, you're modeling the right behavior, but how do we open up the discussions, have the conversations, and guide our teenagers in the right direction?
I mean, goodness, it's so complicated. I mean, modeling for me is absolutely key, and in many ways is what I say to myself is the very best I can be doing right now. Because I underestimated the power of the subliminal messaging I was giving my children as they were growing. And you just don't think about it, but you're effectively saying, you know, here's a sip, only one, because you're a child, but when you're an adult, you'll be allowed to have a whole glass. And you're building up this idea for them of this incredible thing that they're going to be allowed to start doing. So just modelling not doing it is huge for me. And when it comes to my older children, I speak with them when it's appropriate to. I don't launch into an attack on alcohol. But if they ask me any questions or something comes up and it just seems relevant in the conversation, we'll speak about it. One of my older children has already said to me that he feels lucky that if he ever does want to change his relationship with it, take a break or stop, that there won't be any judgment from within his own household. So he's obviously got a sense of that amongst his friends already.
Yeah.
And I think what we need to do is educate our children, really educate them about what alcohol is, how harmful it is. And then anyone who chooses to drink is doing so fully informed and fully complicated. And then it's freedom of choice.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. It's tough though, isn't it? You know, because you say this whole sort of rite of passage thing that as they get to a certain age, oh, won't that be great? Because now you can drink. Like, duh, you know, like, what? Now I look back and think it's such BS, all of it. But everything's been so built up to that, hasn't it?
And most of our childhoods, we're seeing our parents innocently putting a glass of wine to their lips, even once a week, is validating it. And we have all of that, all of those myths to bust as adults.
Yeah, I think it's the celebration things that I find the hardest. It's this sort of link with, you know, again, I know I've said before, but just recently, you know, I bought my son a birthday card. It was incredibly difficult to find a birthday card that did not portray drinking. I mean, really, there really wasn't anything other than, you know, sort of a tree, you know, every birthday card referenced drinking because he's 23, you know. And there's this just assumption that how can you possibly have a celebration without booze? It's still there. It's bizarre, actually. Surely it's time for that to stop. tell us, you know, what else has changed for you then? I mean, I love the way you talk about the resilience that you feel. Talk us through this the fact that you're now three and a half years almost. You know, we started this by saying, you know, sometimes people sort of think, oh, after a year might not be so good. And you said, you know, it does get better, this cliche that it does get better. Have you noticed anything different? You know, was year two different to year three for you?
Yeah, so year two was a bit of a sort of fact-finding mission for me. It was the building up the conscious awareness, I suppose, of the things that I could do on my self-development adventure, shall we call it. And that was me leveraging, if you will, the latent power in that energy that I had and that time that I had and that calm resilience that I had, and starting to sort of literally go within. I found that in year two I became very curious, is the word I would use, just as a sort of umbrella term. I became curious about what do I really like. I became curious about what are my values. I became curious about how can I optimize my nutrition? How can I optimize my fitness, my relationships, my friendship? It was all about curiosity. So year two was an awful lot of courses and reading and learning and podcasts and all that sort of thing. And I'm finding in year three, I've given myself I've taken a break from climbing another mountain for a few months. And what I mean by that is I'm not embarking upon any more courses at the moment or anything too big. I'm wanting to just allow the stuff I've been learning about, journaling about, to just sort of be with me and just see where I go with that. And what I've noticed in year three is that, for example, I'm becoming far more comfortable with feeling uncomfortable, for example.
Yeah, being able to sit with your emotions. Yeah, that's a big one, isn't it?
I could not do that in year two, but I knew it was a thing to aspire to be able to do. So we've gone now into, so some of what I've became consciously aware of in year two has now become, it works on some sort of autopilot. And now things that would have me feeling uncomfortable, I say to myself, all right, what's that emotion saying to me? It's telling me I'm cross. Okay, why am I cross? Okay, this reason. Okay, what do I need to do? How do I need to shift my perspective around that? Who do I need to talk to sort this out? What needs to happen?
Yeah.
And or alternatively, if I'm feeling a bit sort of wired with a little bit of anxiety around something, instead of deciding, as I would have done in the past, well, that's uncomfortable feeling, I'll not do that thing, I say, okay, let's do it. I say, let's go for a run and shake it off.
Yeah, exactly.
Run down the stairs and shake it off. Let's jog on the spot. You know, let's phone a friend. You know.
So you've become very much aware. I mean, I know through our conversations, you know, in the sober club, that you have become aware of what works for you. You know, you now know what your resources are.
Exactly that. So year two was filling up my toolbox. And year three is using it almost with my eyes closed.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, I love that. Yeah, it's such a good way to put it. And who knows what year four will bring then, eh? Oh, I'm the same.
Absolutely. And it's so interesting. Like you often say, I haven't reached the point now where I've stopped noticing shifts and benefits coming in. Mm. Oftentimes it's a pre-existing benefit deepening.
Yeah.
Now also what I'm finding is I'm noticing genuine shifts, and that will be in the form of maybe I'll have a conversation with somebody and I will notice that I am responding to them in a different way.
Yeah.
That's come along with a change in my self-respect and my boundaries. I think I've become far more attuned to my authentic self.
Yeah.
And therefore, if somebody challenges me with something, I'm quietly saying to myself, that's very nice. That's your opinion.
Yeah, I love that.
Vary with mine, but we can still walk along the street together.
Yeah, I think this is so massive, isn't it, with people who, I really believe this is the thing. I don't know if you heard the podcast I did with Catherine Gray, but we were talking about boundaries, and I was saying that, you know, I used to think that people with boundaries were just really mean, you know, she's just mean. because I was just, you know, all that ever mattered was to be a people pleaser and to just sort of just say yes to absolutely everything without considering any of the consequences. And I do think that with sobriety does come this different level of self-respect and being able to set your boundaries, which is always better for everyone.
Yeah, and it's interesting, isn't it? Because I think part of that comes from the confidence and the courage and awareness that you get from doing a hard thing, doing the thing that most of your friends and family aren't doing, and then really feeling deep inside of yourself and really knowing that you've done the right thing for yourself and that you're on the right path. That's empowering. And I think also, you know, you just something about going alcohol free and opening up this sort of self-development world, your boundaries become so much stronger.
Absolutely. So, you know, I mean, this all, you know, this, to anyone listening to this who didn't know you before or whatever, you know, it all sounds like it's literally marvelous. But were there any hard bits? You know, what were the tough bits for you? I mean, for example, you know, did you have any difficult situations with friends, with extended family, without being too personal, you know, can you share anything that was tricky?
Well, just to sort of quickly pop into the start of that, I was very quickly on side with not wanting to drink alcohol. I had an absolute switch reading William Porter's book, and I very quickly had an emotional response along the lines of not wanting to be tricked anymore, not wanting to be part of the game anymore. So in terms of feeling triggered to drink any alcohol in those early days and months, I was very lucky in that regard. I had a total mindset shift very, very early on. But in terms of what I have found tricky, I would say that it's actually probably the frustration that I feel still now, and very acutely in the early stages, of my friends and family still being sucked into this myth and still believing the hype.
Right.
And still genuinely thinking that their lives
are alcohol is the answer.
And I worry that it sounds arrogant of me to say this, but I so desperately wanted and still want more of the people I care about to plug into this.
It's interesting you say that, and I know exactly what you mean. And in the sober club, you know, we sometimes get people, someone will post, you know, oh, I've been sober for sort of 3 weeks and you know, I'm meeting up with friends and, you know, I'm gonna give them a good talking to, and we have to sort of go, okay, now you might just want to calm down a little bit, you know, because the reality is we do get this, of course we do, because the scales have come off, right? We can see clearly the emperor isn't wearing any clothes, right? But if we go in all great guns too evangelical, that doesn't work either.
No, it doesn't. And so this was very much an internal frustration I was having. Of course, if people asked me about it, I probably got quite animated, but I kept it as personal as I could. And you know, explained it from how I was experiencing it. And
yeah, because when you share your own story, no one can argue with that, right?
Yeah, so absolutely. But that's the frustration that I felt and still do feel. And it's things like when you're, you know, it's just the fact that wine is everywhere and booze is everywhere and at school fates.
Well, I was going to say, has your friendship circle changed in any way, or have any dynamics changed as a result of it?
I haven't been a party animal for a very long time now. And by the way, I'm very happy with that. but I really haven't been a party animal for a very long time, in large part due to my commitments within the home.
So your life didn't actually change that much in terms of going out?
No, I didn't notice a dramatic shift in that regard. And I have built up a wonderful group of genuine, like-minded friends since going alcohol-free, mostly online. Some of those online relationships, I've turned them into in real life relationships, meeting up and what have you. And so I think it hasn't changed dramatically for me, but what's changed is going forward, I feel as though my boundaries around what constitutes a meaningful friendship has probably changed. And I would feel more comfortable stepping away from those that didn't serve me anymore. And I can't serve them either if you know.
Yeah.
Our mindsets are different.
Yeah, absolutely. So what would your top tips then be for you know, someone, you know, either starting out or somebody sort of maybe coming up to that year where they're sort of thinking, oh, well, this is going to get flat if I, you know, what would you kind of recommend?
Well, first and foremost, if they haven't already educated and read around alcohol and
yeah, having that logic is so important.
Yeah, that logic, how it really does do what it does to us and busting the myths, if you will. I think that's vital because you can be 5, 10, 15 years sober, but if you haven't had that subconscious wiggle around, you're just going to be pining after that wine for the rest of your life.
Yeah, exactly.
So for me, that's absolutely key to true freedom. And then what I would say is don't be complacent with that energy, that clarity, that time, that peace and that calm, that even if it's just we're gifted with a chemical rebalancing, aren't we, in the early stages. And if we just sit with that and don't proactively do anything with it, then we'll feel okay. But we won't unlock the true magic of an alcohol-free life. And so my recommendation would be brave, go inside, have a look through the filing cabinet of your own body and see what needs reading, rereading, see what needs binning, see what needs filing in a different folder, see what you can do that you've never done before and see how you feel after you've done it. Just read, educate, learn, grow, keep going.
And stay connected, of course.
Stay connected, absolutely, 100%. Yeah.
Brilliant. Well, thank you so much, Wendy. It's really lovely to hear your story and thank you so much for being part of the Sober Club.
It's a pleasure. It really is.
You know, it really means a lot to have people in the group who are sharing, you know, what's going on for them. And also, you know, as you said, you know, it's never only about not drinking. It's about optimizing all these other areas of your life. And that's what's great, to have support and encouragement with like-minded people, isn't it, to do that?
That's where the power lies for me.
Brilliant. Wendy, thank you so much. I really appreciate it. And well, maybe we probably should do this yearly, you know.
Yeah, very happy to.
See what other magic has occurred.
Thanks, Tony.
Thanks ever so much.
Thank you, Wendy Leyburn. Really appreciate it. Don't forget then, check out the Sober Club if it's of interest to you. TheSoberClub.com. Don't forget, I also offer one-to-one coaching. Very, very limited slots, of course, but just drop me a message. Don't forget, you can follow me on social media. I'm in all the, you know, everywhere, at Janie Lee Grace, pretty much. Thank you to Health and Her Menopause website, who offered me the opportunity to write a piece for them. So if the menopause is something you're thinking about because it's on your mind because you've got it upcoming or you're in the middle of it, then have a look at that article on healthandher.com where I'm explaining the link, you know, the cannot be denied link between alcohol and the menopause. It really is, you know, such an important topic. And still to this day, to the best of my knowledge, the majority of general practitioners don't ask women. You know, they ask about their symptoms and then they prescribe the HRT or the antidepressants, often both, without asking about their drinking. It's just absolutely bizarre, literally offering medication on top of self-medication. I do find it bizarre, actually, that the whole alcohol question isn't included in all kinds of health stuff. Why would it not be? You know, you have to say whether you smoke. And I know there are some forms, like if you go to the dentist, you have to fill something in, don't you? That feels fantastic when you tick the box. How many units of alcohol do you drink a week? Oh, no, none. Hey, how cool is that? Why isn't there every... As alcohol is linked to so much ill health and God knows how many different types of cancer, why aren't you asked whatever you're checked for? This should be, you know, kind of one of the first things people check. Anyways, there you go. That's my little mission. I've got some great guests coming up, by the way. I've got a few more Sober Club members I'm going to introduce you to. I'm looking forward to that. I did an interview with an absolutely wonderful author, wonderful guy. Oh my God, I loved chatting to him. We'll probably bring that to you next week. John Siddiqui, who is a meditation teacher and has written a fantastic book. And it's just amazing when you connect with people who are on completely the same wavelength. But, you know, John's been doing this spiritual side of stuff for so many years, and he's got just a most amazing, relatable way of, you know, just making it for everyone, really. So I really hope you'll enjoy that. So don't forget to drop me a message. If you're at the start of your ditching the booze journey, you've got to tell someone. That doesn't mean you have to necessarily tell those close to you, because you'll end up probably having an argument and they'll say, oh, you're all right, just have one. So tell me. You can drop me a message or come and join us in the Sober Club and get that support and connection and accountability that you need. And if you are doing this, give yourself a massive hug, a really, really massive hug. You know, if you've been thinking about this for ages, these are the messages I get so often. I've been listening to your podcast for ages. I keep thinking I can do it. I just don't know if I can. Every day I say I'll get started. And then by the evening, you know, the voice comes in, the wine witch. Oh, you know, 6 o'clock, sun's over the yardarm. Just have one. And it all starts again. If you haven't seen it yet, have a look at my TEDx talk, Sobriety Rocks, Who Knew? That'll tell you what to do with the wine witch. I'll see you next time. Thank you for listening to the Alcohol Free Life podcast, brought to you by The Sober Club. Please rate and review. And if you want support, accountability and inspiration, and you want to live your best life without the booze, check out thesoberclub.com.